Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a new Key 3 Star Chef for you. Now, the Key 3 is our ongoing project. We take you into the kitchens of the best cooks we know for a hands-on cooking lesson. We get each one to reveal the three key recipes they think everyone should know. Well, we headed to New York to meet with the many-starred French chef Daniel Boulud. His restaurants span two continents, but we met at his first and most famous, Restaurant Daniel. He practically bounded out to say hello, giving us big kisses on both cheeks. Daniel is fit, he moves fast, and if kitchens didn't exist, you could see him doing the Tour de France. But his restaurant is brilliantly conceived. You come into a grand, dimly lit lounge and bar. It's all cool greens and blues. And then your table is announced. The double doors open to the dining room, and you're walking into Mediterranean sunlight, all glowing creams and apricot tones. You know you're never going to want to leave this place. But Daniel took us a step further, through the kitchen doors. Now you're in Zen land. Cool green glass tiles, stainless steel, immaculate stovetops, and set up in a corner is a blender, some vegetables, and a few eggs. Daniel, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm so excited to be cooking for you today.
Well, it's great being in this kitchen, I must
yes,
say.
Yes, and you're lucky because normally there's about 30 chefs working here at night. So we have the kitchen for ourselves. We are not open for lunch at Daniel. We're only open for dinner.
So Monday. We can just hang out here and cook
exactly.
together if we want
just
to.
For right. ourselves.
Okay. All right. We asked you to pick the key three recipes that you feel other cooks should know. So what are they?
Well, the key three dishes today, it's the braised beef. It's a chicken steak braised in red wine with root vegetable, an apple tart from Lyon, where I was an apprentice and I learned there. And we're doing an aioli with vegetable and seafood.
All right, so we essentially have a delicious French pot roast.
Voilà, right? pot roast, apple tart, and to start, we go to Provence and start with this beautiful array of vegetable and cod and shrimps
and
in a garlic sauce.
And that's the
aioli.
Aioli. I've always had trouble with that word. So this is a dish from the south of France, right?
Yes.
What is the aioli?
The aioli is basically a very fluffy mayo with a garlic pungent flavor and olive oil inside.
So it's a
and a little bit
mayonnaise.
Of spice.
It's a homemade mayonnaise.
Right. But there's a trick to that.
So you're going to show us the trick?
Yes.
Okay. So we've got a blender set up here.
Yes. Yeah. I have a blender. And to do the aioli, you can do it by hand, but it's better to do it in a blender. And so I'm using eggs. And in the eggs, I am taking one egg, which I will poach in boiling water, a little bit of water. So I'm taking the eggs. I have about 1 quart of water with about a tablespoon of white vinegar.
And why the vinegar?
Oh, just to coagulate the egg white a little bit tighter around the
so that
the
it
yolks.
Doesn't spread. It just helps it come together.
Exactly.
So it's neat. Neat and tidy.
It's not as important how beautiful your egg white, or the egg white is. You want the eggs to be together, but we're going to blend that eggs.
Why do you poach the egg? You're making a mayonnaise. Why do you poach the egg for the mayonnaise?
Because I think by cooking the egg white and by leaving the egg yolk half cooked, plus adding up another two egg yolks to it, I'm going to get a very silky, fluffy, light, and maybe a little bit more homogeneous mayonnaise. And it's maybe also the risk-free broken mayo.
Oh, so it won't break. It won't separate.
It won't break. It won't separate. And you can also add a little bit more water to it, which will even make it more fluffy.
That's a great trick. Yeah. Because homemade mayonnaise can often separate.
Yes.
And then you have a problem.
And so I am just...
Okay.
Pulling up with a strainer.
Right.
And placing that in the blender. Then to the blender, I'm going to add two more egg yolks.
Okay. So you're cracking the eggs. All right.
Yes, separating.
Leaving the whites behind. So two more yolks go in.
So now we are going to sort of a basic mayo process. But again, because it's an aioli, there is a little trick to that mayo.
And that is
that I'm putting garlic. So here inside, after my poached eggs and my two egg yolks, I'm adding 3 cloves of garlic who has been split, in case you have a little vein with the
green germ
has been removed. Yes. And the clove of garlic was cooked in water until in two water. Basically, we poach it until tender.
Yes. Why two water? You mean you because poach it and then you poach it again?
I poach it first for 2 minutes, and then after I change the water, and I poach it again until it's tender. So this way, it's a little bit less pungent, and it make it like sweet garlic. So I have the 3 cloves of garlic inside the blender, who is cooked almost tender, and I am putting 1 clove of raw garlic, who split and remove the germ as
now,
well.
Now, why are you taking the germ out?
Oh, because that one time, you know, I worked in France for a chef called... I didn't work with him directly, but I heard his comment that the germ of garlic was giving a very vulgar taste to the dish. And that meant that the germ is bitter and the germ is... And so.
And we would never want to have a vulgar dish.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Now, what is going in now?
Now I'm putting a tablespoon of mustard. So I'm putting about 2 large tablespoons of mustard.
Really nice tablespoons of mustard, Daniel.
Voilà.
Beautiful mustard. Okay.
And of course, Dijon. It's a Dijon, spicy Dijon.
Right.
I'm putting also a little bit of espalette paper, who is that paper from... Careful, it's spicy.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little bit... It's a hot paper from the Pays Basque. Espalette, the little
Basque
village.
The Basque area between Spain and France. But you could use other chili peppers that you have.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
And salt has just gone in.
So now I'm blending the eggs and garlic gently.
This is really a very easy thing to do. That's the
and
other
I'm
thing.
I'm starting to add the olive oil. So the olive oil, you just pour it gently while things are blending.
That's about what, 1/2 cup or so of olive oil?
Absolutely. We are using, it's again, if you love olive oil, but I try to make it a little lighter so this way olive oil can get a little heavy on this dish.
So you wouldn't do this completely with olive oil?
I mix with canola as well. So it's about, I would say, 1/3 olive oil, 2/3 canola.
Okay.
But you can... And as you are blending, it gets a little thicker. And I'm adding also a little bit of speed. So you can always add a little tablespoon of water to it as well.
And the water is what helps the...
Emulsion of the eggs and the oil.
The absorption of the oil.
Absolutely.
That's another trick to know.
It has more or less the texture of a fluffy mayo.
Oh my. May I?
May we?
We're just sort of dipping our fingers off of the spoon. Oh, so, the garlic comes through, but it's gentle.
Yes.
And it is so silky. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's delicious.
So when you serve this in Provence, you have 2 ways of serving it. You can serve it with vegetable who has been poached in salted water.
Right.
And then you can also serve all the crudité you want.
All the raw vegetables.
Exactly. And if you want your carrot to be raw, you can serve them raw. If you want them cooked, you like them cooked. And we always put also hard-boiled eggs. And here also today I found some mussel. So I have some cooked mussel, I have the cooked shrimps, and the cooked cod.
This just looks gorgeous.
What I love for me, I mean, in that dish is then you take your fork and you dip it into the little bit of aioli. And every time you pick up a little bit of sauce, the aioli, and you just, it just give this wonderful sensation of very refreshing, very Provençal, very al fresco, outdoor. I mean, you know, spring, summer. Here we are in Provence.
Danielle, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Danielle, we've just feasted on the aioli, and now I want to talk to you about the other two recipes of your key three.
Yes, and the other two, one of them is a pot roast, but I'm doing it in a Burgundian style. I'm from Lyon, near Burgundy, and we serve that dish at Bar Boulou on the west side, 64 on Broadway. And the dish basically, first it takes red wine, a good red wine. So we are using a Pinot Noir for that. And what I do before I marinate the meat, any braised beef in red wine, what I do is I reduce the wine by half. And I cook the wine gently, slowly, and reduce it by half. Then I marinate my meat with that.
Why do you reduce the wine?
Because there is a better concentration of flavor of wine around the meat. And then I overnight, or even 2 days is no problem, but overnight it's enough. You place the roast. So this one, we're talking about chicken roast, who is basically a piece of meat with about 5 pounds about.
Right.
5 pounds, and it comes from the shoulder blade, and it has a muscle going through. And it's a very lean, actually, a very lean piece of beef. And it's long, so it's easy to cut slice through it after it's cooked. And so we marinate that overnight and with some mirepoix of vegetable, onion, carrots, celery, garlic, bouquet garni. And the next day, drain it, pat dry, roast it, add that marinated red wine,
and all the minced, chopped vegetables.
And the vegetable, and a little bit of beef stock, and braise it for, we braise it for about 6-7 hours, very gently. We bring it to a boil and braise it very gently. So it's the kind of roast you put in the oven, go to the movie, come back, dinner
and
is ready.
And it's bubbling very, very, voilà. Very, very slowly. Right, right.
And after that roast, we take the roast off, reduce the sauce to the proper flavor, to the proper thickness.
What is the proper flavor and the proper thickness?
I think is to have the right proportion for the roast, where you can always finish your sauce with a little bit of arrowroot or a little bit of cornstarch in case you feel then your sauce is a little too liquid.
Right.
But usually when if you have a good beef stock made ahead, the roast take a fairly nice thickness to it.
Right.
And but you can also use flour when you start the roast. When you roast the roast, you can flour it a little bit as well.
And that'll give it the thickness.
A little bit of thickness.
Are you looking? What flavor are you? Do you reduce down that juice for?
If needed, yeah, absolutely.
To get an intense
absolutely.
Flavor.
But usually, basically, your sauce is gonna go down by. At least it's going to reduce to a fifth of what you started with.
Ah.
So you get a nice concentrated sauce with that. And the vegetable, the root vegetable, you can serve all kind of root vegetable, carrots, celery, rutabaga, salsify, or turnips also with it. And those vegetables can be chunky, big. They can cook with the roast if you want to leave them whole, or peeled and whole, or you can cook them separately if you want that to have a little fresher roasted flavor.
So this is really a hearty winter
honey winter dish. You can also do that very simply with a carrot puree, for example. You know, you poach your carrots and crush them with a little bit of milk and butter and a little bit of sage inside or something.
I'm going crazy here, getting hungry. But all right, what about the last dish?
And the last dish is from Lyon, my hometown, where I learned to make my first apple tart in a restaurant because my mother knew how to make apple tart until I went to this apprenticeship. And at 14, the first thing I did was to make an apple tart. And this apple tart is very simple, but to me is the most delicious. You take a puff pastry.
Right.
And easy to find in the store.
Uh-huh.
And you make sure that it's not too thick. It's about 1/8 of an inch. Usually when you put it between your finger, it almost is as thick as a piece of leather, basically,
uh-huh.
a normal piece of leather. So you feel it like that and roll it. And then you create a large circle. So it depends how many you are at the table. But let's say you do a 12-inch circle. And a 12 or 16 inch circle. And then you brush the border of that circle of puff pastry about 2 inch in with egg wash. And you brush a ring of that on the outside. And then after, with your finger between your thumb and your index, you take the dough and you pinch it. And you leave the tongue on the corner and you roll your index over taking the dough. So now it's going to make a little border to your dough.
So
and
you're
you go
fluting it.
Fluting,
sort voila. Of, but you're making a raised border.
Exactly.
Okay.
All around. Then you finish with a little bit of egg wash around. And then, of course, your apple has been peeled already
mm-hmm.
and they have been split and core and they are ready to be sliced. Or you can slice them ahead before you do your puff pastry. But when you slice them, it's important to slice them on the board and to keep them together. So what you do is you take a small, tiny kitchen knife. You
mm-hmm.
call that a prep knife. How do we call those?
A paring knife.
Paring knife,
right.
So we take a paring knife, and you slide the paring knife on the board, holding the half apple. So this way, you by the time you finish slicing that apple, and they don't have to be super thin, but by the time you finish slicing this apple, it's still together. And you have all your apple slice. And now you start to lay the layers. So you go and make a ring of apple on the outside outside of the dough. Not the outside, but on the...
Near the rim.
Against
right.
the rim, actually. Against
so
the rim.
You're fanning that?
You're fanning the apple all around, closing the fan. Then you are putting the little pieces from the front and the back of the apple.
The smaller pieces.
You put them in the middle. And then you fill in the middle with all the small pieces from each apple you sliced. And so now you have an even layer between the side and the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start another ring of apple over those overlapping the first ring.
Uh-huh.
You start another ring of fan apple over in a smaller circle. Then you fill the middle. And then you start another closing ring.
So you're
ring,
making a pyramid.
A pyramid of sliced fan apple and all that. And then after, you put nuggets of butter all over nicely, evenly. And you put tablespoons of sugar. You basically cover with sugars on
mm-hmm.
top. And then you bake that in the oven for at least, so you want to make sure that the oven is about at 325, 350
mm-hmm.
at the beginning. But as soon as it gets a little bit of color, you slow down the oven a little bit to 300. But you let it cook until the apples have evaporated, cooked down, and basically created, because the apple will definitely cook, dry, evaporate,
right,
and come down, so that pyramid is becoming flatter, but the sugar is caramelizing,
oh.
and the puff pastry is crystallizing around, and then after you let it cool, and it's the most amazing simple apple pie you can make.
Puff pastry, apple, sugar, butter.
Voila.
That's simple, but you have to build the pyramid.
Exactly.
What kind of apple do you like to use?
Well, it depends on, but golden apple worked very well. It's basic maybe, but it worked very well for that tart.
It's a dry apple.
Exactly.
So it's not going to get really juicy.
Exactly, because I wouldn't like to use a green apple, which is maybe a little too tart for that process. I use green apple for other things, like making juice and things.
Danielle, thank you. Great key three. Thank you.
My pleasure, Lynn.
That was Chef Danielle Ballou in the kitchen of his restaurant, Danielle, in New York City. Now, one more thing about Danielle. No detail or courtesy was too small or beneath him. When he insisted we all relax over a meal together, it was still morning and the restaurant tables were bare. Danielle ignored all the helping hands around him, and as we talked, he unfurled a cloth over the table, set our places perfectly, and he served us. Well, to listen to the rest of our conversation about his other key three recipes, braised beef with red wine and bacon, and a really clever caramelized apple tart, just go to the website, splendidtable.org.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.